It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy, and I'm going to call this the fastest intro in the history of the Mayo News Football Podcast because we have so much to get through. Edwin McGrail, how are you?
Good, Rob. Keep going.
Yeah. Ger Flanagan, how are you?
Great, Rob. Belt away.
Yeah. So we're all in agreement that this is the time for our listeners, not for us. Yes?
100%.
Yes. Can't wait.
It's great to have you along, lads. This is your show, folks. We've asked for you to treat us like we're sitting at the other end of the table in a press conference and you're asking us questions. And my word, were we taken away by some of the class questions that we got sent in, recorded from people all over the world. So over the next, I don't know how long, for this episode anyways, Ger Flanagan and Edwin McGrail, who were in Croke Park at the weekend, are going to answer your questions. We've broken it up into a few sections. Let's get part one.
Hi chaps, greetings from across the water in Chorley in Lancashire. Question for you. If another county, for example, Kerry or Mayo or Donegal, had been as dominant as Dublin over the last 6 years, do you think we'd still be having the same discussions about imbalance in the relevant provincial and in the All-Ireland senior football championships?
Let's start with Matt Moss over in Lancashire. There's a story behind Matt and how he's following Mayo for a little bit later. But first of all, Ger Flanagan, you got the question. He has a point there. If another county had done this in comparison to maybe Kilkenny and the Hurling, maybe it'd be a different conversation we're having here.
Yeah, good question from Matt. I hope we don't make a big an arse of debating this as the boys in the Sunday game did last Sunday night. But I suppose to answer the question, I don't think we'd be having the same discussion if it was a Kerry, Mayo, Donegal imbalance. I think simply because I think it's the unbalanced allocations of central funds mainly that is sort of the root of this problem with the Dublin dominance and makes it an awful lot more difficult when you compare that to, say, let's say in this instance, Kerry, Mayo or Donegal. And I think with other counties, there's almost a life expectancy with the team if they're dominating. You saw this with the Mayo team over the last decade that, you know, they weren't dominating, but they were getting consistently to All-Ireland finals. But there was always a feeling that there would be a drop-off at some stage, and that's just natural. But I think the thing with Dublin is because they have so much backing behind them, be that sort of financial resources, you know, the socioeconomic resources that's going behind them, this is just like an absolute steamrolling juggernaut now that is showing no instances of slowing down in terms of their team. The success looks like it's going to keep coming. They're producing generational players every few years. For example, in Mayo, like our generational players are Aidan O'Shea, Lee Keegans, Killian O'Connors. You know, we don't have these three players coming in the next 2 or 3 years. But as you can see with this current Dublin team, since 2011, it's barred three players. I think it's completely a different team, and the standard of player hasn't dropped at all. Every single one of the Dublin players are just, you know, absolutely incredible footballers, incredible athletes. And, you know, you cannot look aside from the root of this problem being the unproportional allocation of central funds from the GAA. I read somewhere that every single club in Dublin has a games promotional officer working for them or close to, as it works out. In Mayo, there's only four or five. And I know, obviously, the bigger clubs in Dublin, there's more of a population. But that is why, you know, that is why we wouldn't be having the same discussion, because Mayo just don't have the resources there to say for people to foresee such a level of dominance like Dublin are.
Yeah, it's the Sunday game did make a real hash of this, and I think I think. One of the byproducts of this debate is you know you're kind of ignoring, or not ignoring, but you can tend to ignore how good the Dublin team are and how good individual footballers they are and how well they have I suppose made themselves function as a team and as a unit, and I think that's another factor that's sometimes lost when you look at it from a finance point of view. It's the geography side of things is a huge thing, that all the Dublin players are based in Dublin. And that's just the way of the world. Whereas your Mayo guys who are going cross country, I think the GAA though have, I suppose, in an effort to grow the game in Dublin, which was struggling at the time, but I don't think they foresaw, or you know, this, I suppose, juggernaut could have been seen 10 years ago in terms of trying to reallocate funding in a better way around the country. And the GAA have been very slow to react in that regard. But as against that, and Ger's point about the GPOs is valid in the sense that a lot of Dublin clubs can afford that. But my understanding of it is that the club pays for half of it and the other half is funded centrally, and that option is available all around the country. And I saw on Twitter during the week that Wexford were saying that half their clubs have a GPO. So, again, you're just kind of wondering, maybe we could be doing more at a local level in that regard. And I think that's one thing Mayo have been very good at doing over the last 10 years. You know, they haven't kind of shrugged their shoulders, they kind of have shrugged their shoulders and just got on with it and tried to take on the Dubs instead of feeling sorry for themselves. So I think there's two approaches. There's what Mayo and other counties need to do better themselves, but then at a more central level, there's what the GAA need to do to kind of try and rebalance this this whole issue. And I think Matt's question is a very good one. And I think, you know, if Mayo, Kerry or Donegal were having the dominance that Dublin had, you'd have to ask the question, why are they having this dominance? And look at it. And I don't think it would be necessarily the same reasons that that Dublin are having the dominance. And we're not talking, as Ger rightly said, we're not talking about a one in a generation team. You know, you look at Con O'Callaghan, Brian Fenton, Kieran Kilkenny, they're key men at the minute. They were all minor or younger in 2011 when they won that All Ireland. So you know, the conveyor belt is in full flow there, and that's the danger, I suppose, is, you know, where do we see this going in 5 years' time? I will add, though, I'm not too sure what the solution is. I don't like the idea of splitting Dublin in two. You know, okay, playing Dublin in Croke Park is a phenomenal occasion. We've seen that ourselves this decade. There needs to be something done to make it a more fairer competition, but splitting Dublin in two, I just think it kind of makes something very artificial of things. And I think, you know, it has to be the very last solution. You know, there have to be other measures looked at far before that.
Remind me, folks, to tell you the story how Matt Moss became a Mayo fan on another occasion. We must have him on sometime. He is behind the Burnley Football Podcast that I listen to randomly enough. We had quite a laugh when we suddenly realised one's listening to the other's podcast on Twitter. So that was great. Moving on, here's Pierce Delaney.
Hi, lads. My question is, Pat Gilroy said that Mayo were probably the second best team of all time on the Sunday game on Sunday. And we know this may have been a bit of an exaggeration. But given the fact that they've pushed this Dublin team so far in the last decade, I'm just wondering, where does this leave them in the teams of all time accolade? I know you have a lot of multiple winners of the All-Ireland previously, like the Dublin 5 in a row, Kerry 4 in a row, Galway 3 in a row, and Meath and Cork, etc., 2 in a row. But, you know, could it be that this Mayo team are in the top 5 or maybe 7 teams of all time? And could it be that they're maybe better than some of the teams, a lot of the teams that won the All-Ireland previously? Just wondering what you think. And thanks. Really enjoying the show. It's absolutely fantastic. You're doing brilliant work. Thanks, lads.
Big thanks to Pierce. And for that question, I'm going to Edwin.
Yeah, very interesting question. And I suppose one that people could have and be pulling their hair out about it. And the answer is, I suppose the only currency in town is the All-Ireland medal. And you could definitely argue that there are teams in the past that have had softer All-Irelands than the All-Irelands Mayo have lost to Dublin. You know, I'm not going to name particular counties, but I can recall, because I don't want to undermine what they're all Ireland. But you look at there are examples. I know it's largely a Mayo podcast, but you never know what other counties might be listening. Yeah, I definitely think Mayo are at a level far beyond a lot of teams that have competed in the past and competed at All Ireland final stage, and even some teams that have won the All Ireland. Are they in the top 5 or 7 teams that have ever played the game? I think it's hard to make that argument without having got over the line. And we know we're talking about an exceptional Dublin team that has stopped them, but you know, we've also seen that the same Mayo team have been at their best against Dublin and have not necessarily been brilliant against other teams. So there's no guarantee if Dublin weren't in the mix that Mayo would be winning All-Ireland. You know, they probably would, but there's no guarantee. So I think, yeah, to put them up in that high, I think would be a bit of a stretch without having actually got over the line. But hopefully we can have a different discussion about that in a few weeks.
Hello, lads. Tony McTighe here from New York. First of all, I just want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Fingers crossed it's a good one. Just want to wish the same to all the gang at home, especially to my mom, who had hip surgery last week, and I just want to wish her a speedy recovery. Secondly, lads, the question I have for you, what have been the biggest influences in our transformation from being very mediocre in our early league games to contesting the All-Ireland final? Looking forward to hearing from you, lads, and keep up the good work. All right. Happy Christmas, boys.
Hi, everyone. This is Patrick Rochford, originally from Bunnyconlon, but calling into the pod today from the United Nations here in Geneva. My question is, does the pod view this game against Dublin as a shot to nothing or a free hit for Mayo? And I'll give you an answer to my own question. I think from my perspective, yeah, we're probably coming up against the greatest side we've ever seen. Yes, we're overwhelming underdogs, but I don't think we can always assume that we'll be such frequent visitors to the All-Ireland final. I think this is a huge opportunity for Mayo, and I think it's a game that's there to be won, but I'd be interested to hear the views of the pod on that particular question. Thank you.
Good stuff. The voices from around the world right there. We went from New York to the UN in Geneva. Ger, first up.
Yeah, good question, Tony. And yeah, it's mad. Like, this season, Mayo have been, you know, two completely different teams from pre-COVID to post-COVID. They came back after the COVID-19 break, completely rejuvenated, looking like a different outfit completely. Whereas, you know, if you cast your mind back to the early stages of the league, they didn't look like that. And it was multifactorial. You could say that, you know, James Horne brought in a lot of new players, a lot of young players, giving them a chance early on in the league. They, you know, hadn't settled in fully. He was yet to nail down a starting team, and I think a massive one as well is the fact that Killian O'Connor wasn't part of that league team at all. Don't think he played a minute pre-COVID in the league because of I think he was nursing tendonitis in his knees at the time, and you know, since he's come back and obviously made use of the COVID break, he's been a different man, and Mayo have been a different team. And I think the COVID break in general was a massive, massive bonus for this team. And James Horne was asked about this yesterday during his press conference for the All-Ireland final, and he said that he'd absolutely no doubt about it, that the sort of upturn in form in from both the collective and a personal point of view was because of that break. It allowed some of the older guys to rest, recuperate, get their minds focused again, and then allowed some of the younger guys to get involved, get to know some of the new teammates a bit better, and to work a bit harder on their S&C. And you know, look no further than the likes of Oisín Mullen and I know McLaughlin, who definitely availed of the COVID break.
Absolutely agree with everything Ger said there, and I think the older lads who have been on the road for so long, that break has been invaluable. I know I spoke to Tom Prendergast as well, former Mayo selector, another Ballintubber man, who was a selector under James Horne, and I was speaking to him about Killian O'Connor, and he was just saying basically about the the fact that Killian O'Connor is working from home now rather than working from Dublin as well, is bound to have helped as well. So little things like that, the rest, and then the club campaign gave a chance for the younger lads as well to show what they could do, and then James Horne was able to, I suppose, have maybe changed his mind on a few guys over the course of the summer, that because in a way that mightn't have happened in a conventional season.
Ger, Patrick brings up a really good point. We want to believe that this is a shot to nothing, but I mean, at the same time, what is a chance when you get it? You have to take it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I recognise Patrick Rochford's name from Twitter. All right, I didn't know he'd a big job in the UN over in Geneva, but I would fully agree that it's a shot to nothing, to be honest. And I draw sort of a lot of comparisons to ourselves in the county intermediate final this year. Not that they're the same thing. Obviously, they're completely two different arenas. But I think the mindset might be going into the final. I can compare a lot, like when we were playing Kilshamah. No one gave us a chance. We were mad underdogs. They were supposed to win it comfortably, and like that seeped into our mindset for the 2 weeks leading up to the game, and that there was absolutely no pressure from our point of view. We just felt we could go in, do our thing. No one's expecting much of us anyway. No one expected us to get to the final, and it made the process those 2 weeks leading up to the game so much better. And like at the end of the day, you know, the pressure is on Dublin here. They're the team that have to perform. They're the team going for the six in a row. They're the team expected to beat Mayo fairly comfortable. I think 9-2, I think Paddy Power were given Mayo odds, some like massive odds in a two horse race. I think it's the game is there from that point of view, perfectly set up for Mayo, and especially the young players too. You know, this being all Ireland final for them, like no other experience. They don't have to worry about 80,000 people in the crowd. They don't have to worry about all that pre-match nerves and the pre-match tension that they would have got when they were sitting in the dressing room and, you know, the roof is absolutely shaking from the crowds above them. So I think it's a great shot from that point of view.
Brilliant stuff. Let's move on to, we break up the last two questions in this segment because they're really interesting ones as well. All these questions are brilliant. I think we're going to have to stop the phrase great question at some point, but we'll keep it going for now. Kevin Higgins, here he is.
Hi Rob, Kevin Higgins here from Malahide in Dublin. Question for the lads. Just with that first 10 minutes that we had against Tip, where we were quite exposed at the back, particularly that full back line, two goal chances that obviously came there, the Clark saved us. Do we think we're going to go with that approach against Dublin? And as part of Horan Ball, is that, you know, maintaining that just going forward and, you know, maybe next year, whatever happens on Saturday, you know, we've other players coming back in, Owen O'Donoghue, Brendan Harrison, who firmed that line up going forward.
Edwin, you've got this one. Thought?
Yeah, I think it would have been a concern that James Horan spoke about after the game, and certainly watching the game up there, we were surprised that there was, when Quinn Livin and Sweeney went inside, that there wasn't a sweeper put in front of them. But I suppose the more we thought about it, the more we realised how little we've learned from watching James Horan and his teams. Very much that's how he goes out, and that's how he sets his team out, is on the front foot. And sure, we might give you a couple of chances, but we're going to create more at the other end. And I think it was telling that he was annoyed afterwards with the manner of the defending for those two early goal chances. Like Lee Keegan, he would have felt could have done better for that goal chance that Sweeney had, and that Chris Barrett could have defended. Sorry, Keegan for Quinlivan, and then that Chris Barrett could have defended Connor Sweeney a bit better. So that's very much what he's looking to do, is not to change the approach, but look for individual improvement in players and better, I suppose, a better quality of defending from individuals.
Yeah, and speaking to James Horan yesterday in the press conference as well, he was very bullish on his team's tactics. He sounded like a man who wasn't going to adopt a new plan. I think he said he was very, very confident, was the quote, that they have their current tactics can threaten the Dubs. And he was asked too if he might adapt more a defensive mindset, and he said something along the lines of that people do try and do stuff that they've never done before and it backfires on them, and they're gonna continue doing what they're doing well and not try anything else. And just from that, reading between the lines of what he was saying like that, I think he's gonna go full hog. He's gonna go with the press and the aggressive tactics and just try and hurt Dublin on the front foot.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. One more question for this segment, and it comes in from Nullig.
Hi Rob, my name is Nullig. I'm teaching up in Meath. My roots are in Bell, but unfortunately, the minute I'm living in enemy quarters in Dublin. I have a question for the podcast, a long-winded one, so forgive me. James Horan has always seemed to favour an all-out attack approach, with particular emphasis on pressure up the field. If you can remember 2013, the forwards turning over the ball, and what was evident last Sunday as well. Generally, he focused on his own team more than his opposition. Stephen Rochford seemed to favour a more mixed approach, but generally a more defensive one. And examples of that would have been the sweeper, Kevin McLaughlin in 2016, Aidan O'Shea as a fullback in 2017. I'm just wondering which of the two styles ye prefer and why.
Edwin, back to you.
Thanks, Nullig. And thanks, Rob, for putting that one my way. Yeah, not an easy question at all, that one. But a very interesting one, and one that a discussion point that I've had and plenty of people have had over the last number of years is comparing James Horan and Stephen Rochford, and both have been brilliant for Mayo, and both have brought Mayo very, very close to crossing the line. We've spoken there in answering Kevin's question about how James Horan sets up his teams, and you know, I don't think he's going to necessarily change a massive amount the next day. I think To be fair, when you're talking about Stephen Rochford, I think against Dublin as well, he pretty much went man on man, and there was an occasional sweeper dropping back, but there wasn't a full-time sweeper. And I think James Horan might try and do something similar in the final, that, you know, you'll try and get a plus one back. Where Stephen Rochford did, I suppose, taper his approach was for, you know, particular situations, like Aidan O'Shea full back, as Nolik points out, against Kieran Donaghy, and Barry Moran as sweeper in 2016 against Tipperary, when Quinlivan and Sweeney were inside, and we saw last week how James Horan took a different approach. Which approach would I prefer? Whichever gets us over the line, I suppose. But yeah, I can see the merits to both, and I don't think there's a huge gulf between them. I don't know, am I sitting on the fence there? But I can see why James Horan is setting up his teams like this. And I do think if you're playing Dublin in an All-Ireland final, if you decide and over-focus on protecting your own goal, well, you're not going to have enough forward momentum to threaten them, and they will just slowly grind the game down their way. So I do think you need to be aggressive against Dublin, and James Horan has shown that in the past, and as has Stephen Rochford. So I think that's going to be the approach on Saturday week.
I'd agree fully with Ed. I think certainly, you know, I think there was a great unpredictability about Stephen Rochford's tenure with Mayo, and that it was fascinating to see what he was going to do in terms of matchups and how he was going to line out his team. You know, for example, what he did against Tyrone that time and starting Alan Dillon, the full back, and moving him up on Colm Kavanagh. And then there was obviously the tactics with Tipperary. And, you know, so there was he laid out his Mayo team to play against the strengths and weaknesses of the opposition, where James Horan just likes to, as we've said, go with that one sort of game plan. But, you know, when Mayo did play Dublin, Stephen Rochford opted for tactics that would be very similar to James Horan's, in going man-to-man and playing aggressive football, pressing high. So from that point of view, you know, playing Dublin as an opponent, the tactics are very, very similar.
GRG Sports are proud sponsors of this podcast. Kit out your team today. Bespoke team sportswear designed by players for players. Be game, be ready, be geared. Check out GRG's website at grgsports.com.
Yeah, GRG are putting up a beanie hat for the best question. How we're going to decide that is going to be tricky, but we'll get to that in a while. Here's a couple more.
Hi, lads. Danny here. Hope you're all keeping well. My first question is, do you agree with Peter Canavan's assumption that we have a different kick-out strategy in mind that we just haven't unveiled yet? You know, we have a number of issues, obviously, to solve from the semi-final and the year that's gone. But that's one of our main issues, is basically the retention of our own kick-out and pressing the opposition kick-out. And my second question is, are you looking for anyone to help out on the Match Day podcast? Obviously, I'd be delighted to attend if so.
Hi, guys. Look, we all know that Dublin will focus on pressing up strongly on David Clark's kick-outs, and that they'll go man-to-man on the Mayo players for the kick-outs. So what strategies should Mayo adopt to give Clarkey more options and the best chance of finding his man when kicking out the ball? Thanks, guys. Up Mayo!
Well, straight off the bat there, before we get to Gwen's question, I'll go to you, Edwin. I think Danny has gone for broke. He doesn't want a beanie hat. He wants a seat in Croke Park. It's a big bid. It was worth a shot. I'll give him that. A good question as well. We can move on to kickouts in this segment.
Yeah, he's one of that would come to number 15 of the amount of people that are offered to carry my bag if I get to Croke Park on for the All-Ireland final. So, yeah, God, I think I could nearly be carried in myself at this stage with the amount of offers of help. But all I will say to people is you'd be surprised how anticlimactic it might be being at the game the next day, although grateful as we are, all are to be there. But, you know, it's definitely not a typical Croke Park occasion, that's for sure. But yeah, on to his question. And I was watching Peter Canavan last night talking about that, and that maybe Mayo were holding something back in terms of how they might set up for the kickouts. Perhaps they were. It's going to be very interesting to see what they come with there, because certainly the way they approached the kickouts in the second half against Tipperary, and even at times in the first half, isn't going to cut it against Dublin. There's no doubt about that. So what do they do? And I remember Billy Joe making a point in the podcast there a couple of weeks ago about loading a particular area, getting three or four bodies around it, between your midfielders and your half forwards, but making sure that your defensive shape is as well set as you can be and making it as much of a 50-50 opportunity as possible. And I suppose that's touching on to Gwen's question as well. I think Mayo will still look to get a kick out off short where possible. So if David Clark can get the kick out off quickly, you know, if it's on and they can work it short, but that is obviously risky. I think the intermediate or medium kickouts that we talk about as well are, you know, they're going to be dangerous in excess. So I think we need to look at a strategy for long kickouts. How we're going to organise bodies to give ourselves the best opportunity to win that ball.
The kickout chat is a funny one. I definitely be kind of thinking along the lines at this stage that it's just come in one way. I think it's been so completely overanalyzed, you know, at the minute in terms of what we can do and strategies like the, you know, the. Not to oversimplify it or anything, but when Dublin press, there's only two options. You're either going to go long or you're going to go short. And the short one is, you know, the less percentage because it's going to be very hard to work. So if you go long, you're either hitting to the wings, hopefully, because you don't really want a chance going down the middle. So either hit to the wings, come up with some sort of signal from David Clark, what wing he's going to hit, and then flood bodies there and just rely on your outfield players to win the breaks. And then vice versa, the other side. Short then is obviously dangerous when Dublin press up. So you're either, you know, you're relying on David Clark to get it out really quick, hoping that the Dublin players aren't going to be switched on and that there'll be a spare man free, or you're going to get a to draft back or one of the midfielders running in deep, and David Clark might have the option to chip it over the front line or maybe chip it through the gap that might only be 5 yards between the attacking lines. You know, in so many ways, and maybe it's from club football, and maybe because my own brother is a goalkeeper as well. You know, I think the reliance or the expectation from the goalkeeper. So you know, when David Clark kicks out the ball, and if it's not won by his midfielders, people will you know blame David Clark for that. I'm always at the point of view that when that ball leaves the tee to a certain extent, it is completely up to the outfield players to win that ball. And that, you know, and so much of that comes down to breaks.
Yeah, I'd agree. There's a lot in that, like in the sense that, and that's what I would have been told when I was starting off in goal, that put it out long, and it's up to the boys out there to battle for it. And there's a lot of truth in that. But I suppose the concern is when Dublin press, you know, they're. And the reason they're pressing is because this perception that Mayo will struggle on their own kickout, and sometimes that can feed things in of itself. You know that the perception is there, and therefore Dublin go after it because they feel it's a weakness. And sometimes what's not a weakness can become a weakness because of the attention in the press. Yeah, and if you think back to last year's All Ireland semi final against Dublin, which brings us on to our next question, which from Laura Heaney actually.
Hello guys, this is Laura coming from the steps of the amazing Sydney Opera House. Nothing quite as fancy in my hometown of Claremorris. Just like to say a massive thanks for all the work everyone does at the podcast. It's a great listen and lovely to have been so far from home this year. So keep up the good work. For now, I'm going to direct my question to Edwin. Just reflecting back on the semi-final last year, Mayo went into half-time holding that lead and then went on to concede those two early goals in the second half. How do Mayo avoid that situation this year and maintain their concentration levels? And do you believe that the water breaks might have an impact on this?
Exotic locations continue. Sydney Opera House. Not bad going there, Edwin.
No, I was there for a year and 12 years ago. And I'm here in Achill at the minute looking out at the wind and the rain. So you'd pine for Sydney, all right, on days like this. But last year's game was very interesting in the sense that Mayo were in a great position at half time, and Dublin just came with probably one of their finest spells of football that we've seen in the last decade in that third quarter. And they were just, it was like shock and awe. And there was a number of different reasons for it. One of the reasons I think was, I suppose, Mayo were going into that game having went the long road and were very... We're, I suppose, under a lot of pressure from a stamina point of view, and I think you know, they had played Donegal obviously a week previously, and when Dublin won Mayo kickouts after half time, they were in all sorts. Mayo were in all sorts of bother, and I think looking back, Mayo won a lot of kickouts and didn't use them well. But I think they could have slowed things down a lot at that stage. So I think that's going to be crucial. Is that if Dublin are dominant at a particular stage, you know, you need to press in emergency, press red. Someone needs to go down. Someone needs to try and buy a bit of time, just slow that momentum. And I don't think Mayo generally, not just in that game, have been great at doing that. And I think the water breaks are absolutely vital.
It's a really interesting point. Yeah, we talk about that a bit.
Yeah, if you look at All Ireland finals against Dublin, Mayo have been in it with going into the last quarter, and just having that 1 or 2 minutes, you know, before the last quarter could be huge. If Mayo are still in the game, if the game is there for Mayo with a quarter to go, and they have that chance to just reset, to just focus, and you know, talk about everything previous to that is in the past. To talk about the next 15, 20 minutes block, you know, rather than just that talk happening at half time, because it's one thing to be in a game with Dublin coming into the last quarter. It's another thing entirely to get the job done. And just that water break could give Mayo a crucial chance to assess what they need to do.
Sure. Second question then about what you experienced this summer, because there was a water break in a county semi-final against my own club, Ballinrobe, where I feel whatever the hell happened in the Balt side of the field, it was pretty effective. Now, maybe you'll tell me that hadn't a whole lot to do with Enton, but you went into that water break almost down and out, and you came out of it in that final quarter. And like, I don't want to say you blew Ballinrobe away, but you got the job done and won well.
Yeah, I think going back to that semi-final, there was no absolute, you know, bombshell words said during it, or any whiteboard out devising up tactical game plans to get the job done. I think it just, thing with the water breaks, it just kind of upsets the rhythm for a team that has a lot of momentum. And then for the team that's on the opposing side of that momentum, it gives them a second to rein it back in and to calm down and almost get a break even as well. And I think it's going to be so fascinating the next day, and it could potentially help Mayo. Like, God knows we needed a water break in the semi-final last year against Dublin when they had that 10 or 15 minute period of just complete dominance from the kick out. And I'd be hopeful or optimistic, because you know the chances are Dublin are going to have a large period of sustained pressure or sustained dominance at some time in that second half. And just like we saw last year, you know, when they had that period of dominance, they blew Mayo away and they won the game. So if they had that period, you know, 5 minutes before a water break or 7 minutes before a water break, it'll completely upset them. It'll more damage limitation from a Mayo point of view. And as Ed said there as well, and this is kind of answering on Laura's question too, slowing the game down, you know, go down injured, get David Clark to kick the ball away into the stand. You know, just get a breather. Aidan O'Shea was actually speaking at the press event yesterday too, and he was asked specifically about that period of dominance from Dublin last year, and just like Ed said, he felt that Mayo actually had plenty of opportunity with possession, that they actually won enough possession to cause trouble with Dublin at the other end, but they made the wrong decisions. They didn't get the runners attacking the Dublin side of the field, or they coughed up possession too easy. So you know, it's easy to say that Dublin completely dominated that, but it's also easy to forget that Mayo had their moments that they could have stemmed the tide a bit.
Killian Gavin here, living in Dubai, and originally from Castlebar. My question for you is: do you think the lack of game time for the senior players like Higgins, Parsons, or Boyle will affect them if they get thrown into it in the final?
Hi Rob, it's Tom Prendergast here. Just a question for the podcast. Has the influence of the older players who have come on as subs during the games been a disappointment?
Yeah, two great questions again there. I'm getting more of my atmosphere, the streets of Dubai. I'm constantly trying to make the radio documentary I've never got to make, lads. Jared, that sounded good. I feel like I was there.
Yeah, well, you love to be in Dubai now at the minute. I'm just looking out here at my patio door and it's windy and rainy here in Bal. And yeah, the thought of being in Dubai, it's very nice. Even for a redhead, it wouldn't be too gone on the sun and all that. I'd love a break away right now.
Obviously, I come from the south of the county here in Ballinrobe compared to the rest of you, so it's much, much warmer. It's around 22 degrees. Beautiful day here in Ballinrobe now. I mean, it's a great advantage, obviously, to live in the south, but it's enough of that. Mm. Edwin, maybe take the question before we wander off on a tangent here.
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting question, and same from Tom Prendergast afterwards. And I can pretty much think I can confirm that that's not the Tom Prendergast I interviewed in the Mayo News, the former Mayo selector. So it's... more than two Tom Prendergasts into Mayo football. There's more than one Tom Prendergast into Mayo football. And I remember Killian Gavin from his minor days actually as well with Castlebar Mitchells and St. Charles, very good midfielder back in the day. But yeah, very interesting question about the guys coming on. And there would have been an expectation earlier in the campaign that they were just being held in reserve for when they were needed. But as the season has went on, that appears to be less and less so the case. Keith Higgins came on in the Connacht final. Tom Parsons came on the last day. But Colin Boyle, Donald Vaughan, Shamie O'Shea haven't seen any game time at all. And is their impact disappointing is what Tom is asking. I suppose Keith Higgins wouldn't have been overly pleased with his a couple of spills in the Connacht final. He looked a little bit rusty, and I thought if he was going to be a meaningful option from the bench for an All-Ireland final, you would have seen him the last day against Tip. Now, that I could be misreading that, but I think the fact that the players in question haven't been used a lot, is it going to impact them if they're brought on an All-Ireland final? Absolutely, and I think the way James Horan has used his bench would seem to lean towards the fact that he mightn't be relying on them in an All-Ireland final, or certainly that's the way he's thinking about it, but... you know, time will tell on that one. I certainly think that, you know, if you got a bit more time into Keith Higgins in particular, Colin Boyle for particular situations, Jamie O'Shea as well, like, you know, I do think that there are situations in an All-Ireland final against Dublin where their experience could be invaluable, and maybe they still might be used, but I do think they might be rusty and there are risks with that.
Yeah, I'd agree, Ed. If you go back to 2016, 2017, you know, you would have taking someone's hands off if you had the possibility of guys on the bench with the experience of Boyler and Higgins and Tom Parsons, but as you said, you know, they haven't got a lot of game time. You know, Parsons came on the last day against Tip, obviously didn't get a lot. The game was, you know, all but dead, so it's going to be very hard to make an impact. Higgins came off the bench against Galway, looked rusty in the two or three plays that he had, and you know, we haven't seen Boyler at all. And you know, at the start of the championship, you would have been able to foresee that Parsons and Higgins and Boyle wouldn't be starting the game, but you would have liked to see them at least get a consistent appearances off the bench so they can build a bit of form, build a bit of confidence, so that in the event that we do get to an All-Ireland final and you're coming down the home stretch and you have these guys ready to come off the bench who have been playing this type of role throughout the campaign so far, know what they have to do. And you know, it's disappointing in one sense that we're not, because you know, you'd love to see James Horan unleashing Higgins and Boyle and Parsons almost in the same way that Dublin would have unleashed Kevin McManaman, say, over the last few years. That impact sub that just actually physically lifts the team when he comes on. And I don't think that's going to happen. But in the event that the game is tight the next day, or we're 1 point down, I still love to see Colin Boyle or Keith Higgins coming off the bench, you know, over some of the lads, the younger lads who might have got more game time throughout the campaign, just simply because of their experience.
All right, final segment. This is a little bit lighter, but there's some very important points to cover here as well. Let's start with Derek.
Hi, guys. If you could create the best Mayo player from the current panel by combining the best parts of up to five different players, for example, the fastest, strongest, best left foot, best right foot, best fielder, and most importantly, best championship haircut, who would those five be? Cheers, Derek.
Okay, that was a bit of a mind twister. Really, really challenging here. Edwin, have you got the full list? Have you drawn a picture or did you just write it down?
Yeah, I very quickly tried to scramble it down. You know, we've discussed in the past about the need to maybe clone Aidan O'Shea and have him a full forward at midfield, but this is altogether different level of futuristic thinking. But I think I'll go with Tommy Conroy's pace, maybe Oisin Mullins' pace, but I'll go with Tommy. I'll go with Aidan O'Shea's strength. I'd go with Owen McLaughlin's left foot. We're not blessed with left footers. There's a better left footer in it, but I'm keeping him for somewhere else. Killian O'Connor's right foot, I don't think that can be questioned. Aidan O'Shea is gone as a fielder, so I go with David Clark. He came off the line there and fielded a ball on the 21 at one stage in the first half, which was very impressive. And I go with Kevin McLaughlin for championship haircut. And the reason I'm going with that is Kevin is a new dad at the minute. And any man that's able to get his haircut at all these days with a newborn in the house and able to shave deserves plenty of praise. So we put Kevin in there.
You're playing it safe for that one, Ed.
George, do you have any objections to any of that there?
Similar enough. I would go, obviously, Aidan O'Shea's strength, physicality. I'm going for Paddy Durkin's pace instead of, was it Oisín Mullen you went for, Ed?
Tommy Conroy,
yeah. I was torn between Tommy O'Madlachlan and Oisín Mullen for pace, but I went for Paddy Durkin as well in the end. I'm going for David Clark's fielding, of course, coming out with the big boot. Killian O'Connor's right foot, Kevin McLaughlin's left foot instead of his championship haircut, and I'm going with Oisín Mullen's championship haircut.
Seemed to be an obvious one. The bookies would have had that clear favourite, but Edwin's come in with one from left fielder.
Yeah, we should just declare there now, you know, we're doing this on Squadcast, we can see each other, obviously the podcast listeners can't, but Ger has a bit of an Oisín Mullen hairdo going on himself, so he should declare his interests in that in that regard, I think, you know, in fairness, for fear of accusations of bias.
Yeah, I've been taking screenshots of each podcast so we can watch it develop. We'll have a nice over the course of the season there. Jerry's Oisín Mullen hairdo.
Yeah, Oisín's my idol now at the minute, so I'm trying to copy him.
Hi guys, my name is John, or Willie Joe know me as Revelino on the blog. So hello to everybody there, and hello to everybody out in blog world. So they say that you should plan for all eventualities in a big game. So I was just thinking, let's say on the 19th, we get through 70 minutes of football, there's 4 minutes of injury time called. We're 2 minutes into injury time and we're ahead by a point and we're awarded a penalty. Now, what do you tell your penalty taker to do? Do you tell him to clip it over the bar and go 2 points up, or do you tell him to go for goal? Now, you don't score the goal if a mountain of time, 2 minutes, for a team like Dublin to go up the field and tie it up and get a point. I mean, it's a lot of time. Clip it over the bar, go 2 points up, and you know Dublin are going to they're going to go up there and if they hammer home a goal, you're probably saying goodbye. Goodbye to Sam at that stage. So I'd like whoever is there, Ichi, to tell me what she would tell the penalty taker to do and why. Thanks very much. Happy Christmas to everyone.
Revelino is a name that pops up on the Mayo GA blog regularly. Great to hear from him. Edwin.
Yeah, all day long, go for goal, I think, at that stage. If you're a point up, you know, if you're point down, it's a different debate maybe, but if you're point up and Killian O'Connor is your penalty taker and he's on the pitch, I think he scored 10 out of 11 penalties in his Mayo career, the only miss being a point against Kerry where he was going for a goal in the day he broke his championship record, but a day to forget otherwise last year down in Killarney. But yeah, I think try and make the game safe, you know. There's no guarantee that a two-point lead is going to get you home and over the line, whereas a four-point lead, different story.
I'm old enough to remember Donegal getting the penalty against Mayo in 1992 and tapping it over. But at that stage, I think there were three up. So that made absolute complete sense, really. Anything to add to that, Ger?
Wasn't even born then, Rob.
Yeah, that's not what I wanted you to add to that. But I feel like it's significant. All right, last question. Oh, brace yourselves for this one because no one has even thought of it. Or if you have, no one asked.
Hi, guys. Season's greetings. It's Jim Zoldy, Mayo's number one American-born fan and a friend of the podcast. As we've already learned this year, expect the unexpected. So when Dean Rock misses his third free at the end of the second overtime period and the game's level and is going to be decided by penalty kicks, which 5 Mayo players are you selecting and in what order? Thanks. Hope everyone's well. Can't wait to see you all next year in person.
Ah, the great voice of Jim Zoldy. Last time he was on the podcast, I think it was when we were over in New York, and always welcome back. Our friend of the podcast, absolutely lifelong. Loving the overtime terminology as well. I love my American sports. Gerard, what do you reckon? It's a good point. We need a penalty shootout plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another question actually was asked, that was asked to James Horne yesterday in the presser, reckons that they have a short list of about 10 players, and if it comes to it, they'll narrow it down then, sort of depending on how the game goes. But if I was picking my five penalty kickers, I'd be going Killian O'Connor first because he's the best and he'd get Mayo off to hopefully a successful start. I'd be going for Ryan O'Donoghue second, good soccer player in his day, formerly of Sligo Rovers. I'd be confident he put it in the bag. Then I put Jim O'Connor third, good free taker off the ground, and not a bad soccer player with Ballyhane, and I know he played at Mayo underage in the Kennedy Cup back in the day as well. My fourth one then, well, I struggled for a fourth one. It's a funny number. You know, I think your first and your last one are almost important, but I've gone for Conor Loftus simply because I heard a great story about Conor Loftus when he was playing with Mayo under 21s, and when Mike Solon and Joe Kane and the likes were training the team, they used to tell the players that if you're true on goal or if you have an opportunity to take a point and the goal is not 100% on, do not shoot at all costs. Put it over the bar. The only exception to that was Conor Loftus. So obviously, he's a very accurate footballer. So I'd be going for him, number four. And then number five, I'm going to go with Aidan O'Shea because he's a leader. He'd have confidence to step up in a pressure situation in the last kick. And he actually said himself yesterday in the press conference again that he'd be putting his hand up for one. So from that point of view, I'd be going for O'Shea last.
I just before you give me your list, Edwin, I just want to put on the record, I'd have absolutely no problem with winning an All-Ireland on the penalty shootout after all these years. If anyone wants to try to tell me, would taint it. Not at all. I'll take it. Thank you very much. Move on.
No, it wouldn't taint it in the slightest. I suppose the prophets of doom might say that it would be a new way for us to lose an All-Ireland final. but let's not go there. Yeah, I'm tempted to ask, was Ger reading my notes? Because very similar lineup. But I think, in fairness, I think it's an easy enough list to narrow down. And fair play to Jim for the question. But I think absolutely Killian O'Connor has to be number one, get you off to a winning start. I go with Jeremy at number two, Ryan O'Donoghue number three, Conor Loftus number four. And Ger is privy to information there that Aidan O'Shea has put the hand up. I was going to go for Lee Keegan as the last one, purely from a point of view of, again, a leader and a guy who is no problem scoring goals in Croke Park. But, you know, if Aidan O'Shea is willing to put his hand up, you'd have every faith in him too. I faced penalties from Aidan O'Shea in training in the past, and I'm trying to remember, I might have saved one or two, but that could be out of several hundred, you know. So, yeah, he'd probably be, and he has played soccer as well in the past, and a big soccer fan, a big Liverpool fan.
Do you know, I have to say, I made that point about I don't care if we win an All-Ireland that way, but when you went into more detail there, I suddenly started to really place myself in a situation where we're watching Mayo and Dublin on the penalty shootout for an All-Ireland final, and my stomach actually churned a little bit. And this is how many days out from the All-Ireland? Back in there, Edwin, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose just, yeah, to I was only, I suppose, trying to toy with people's emotions there. We have to remember, we talk about who's going to be taking the penalties, but who's going to be saving them.
Yeah,
I think that's where Mayo would have a huge advantage. David Clark's record in front of penalties is, I think, second to none in the country. And Stephen Cluxton is an excellent goalkeeper and has saved penalties in the past. But I just think David Clark, his agility and his size, I think gives Mayo an edge there too. So, yeah, if it comes down to it, Jim, here's hoping that we get the right balance.
Yeah, one notable admission we both made, Ed, is Darren Cohen and the possibility that he comes off the bench. And if he did,
yeah,
I'd probably put him in there ahead of Conor Loftus.
Well, I suppose, yeah, we're going with five guys that are starting there and that started the semi-final. And the likelihood is they all won't be on the pitch at the end. Like Ryan O'Donoghue came off early enough the last day as well. You know, Conor Loftus might be off the field. Dermot O'Connor even came off a bit early the last day. That doesn't mean that it'll happen in the All-Ireland final, but you know, yeah, so guys on the bench might need to step up as well.
both of you have to think of the best question so we can get a beanie hat off to them. While you do that, I'll give you a second and I'll say two things. One, just as a follow-on from that, Pierce Delaney did say to me that hopefully Mayo can get their Italia 90 moment next week and win it. And I just thought, what was Italia 90 most defined for? A penalty shootout between Ireland and Romania. So all these omens are heading our way. Tomofte against Bonner, Edwin.
Yeah, and I think there's a famous Con Hoolahan line about Italia 90 that I missed Italia 90, I was in Italy, and I think that could be true of us if we're in Croke Park. I missed my own All-Ireland, I was in Croke Park.
There you go. So while you think about the best question, I want to say to you two things. We're asking one other thing from you at the moment anyways. We would love you to send us in some more thoughts before the final. We'll tell you more about that in during the week and on our social media podcast. But this worked really well. So we're going to do it again just to wish the team luck. So send us in your messages if you want to know more about how to do that. The easiest way to get in touch is by direct message on Twitter with any of us, or you can get onto John's blog, mayogablog.com, and contact him there to get some of the details of how to send in your best wishes messages by audio from anywhere around the world. We've had some great messages and I really appreciate this. I've mentioned it before, follow at Mayo Podcast on Twitter. That's a great way of supporting us because it just builds our audience and helps us to spread the message when we want to tell you all about what we're doing. In the meantime, though, before you give us the best question, lads, I have to say, this is phenomenal. It's brilliant to be talking to these people, and it's brilliant to think that our listeners just ran the entire show. You've been fantastic, and that's brilliant. Lads, prepare yourselves. You have to call it. Beanie hat. I'm the kind of, if the vote is split, I'll have to pick one. So, Edwin, you go first. Actually, why did I make that? Why would I possibly put that on myself? God, that was stupid.
Yeah. Well, you just have. So, yeah, Jeremy, make sure you don't give the same answer as me. And of course, Rob. 100%. So many great questions and so much pause for thought with a lot of them. And thanks, Rob, for sending them on in advance. I think if you hit us with some of them on the spot, I think it would have been it would have really been a test of the brain power. But I suppose the question that gave me most pause for thought and had me thinking and finding difficult to answer, I think, was Nullick's question about comparing James Horan and Stephen Rochford. I felt that was a very deep and incisive question. A lot of great questions there, no bad question among them. But yeah, Nullick was my favourite one.
Sure, you agree, and that's the end of this.
No, I disagree. In the interest of fairness, I disagree. And I'm going to pick Patrick Rochford's question all the way from Geneva, just because I could talk about Ball winning a county final again, and it brought back great emotion. So thanks for that, Patrick.
I think Patrick will understand why I'm just not going to go with you on that, because Ballinrobe lost in the semi-final. But you know what? I think they both deserve a beanie. We can surely conjure up two beanies. There's only a few of them in the world, but let's do that. Maybe we'll just call it a tie, which is not going to happen on Saturday week. Lads, we'll talk to you soon.
See you, Rob.